Unit 3. Text A. Why Nations Trade. International trade is the exchange of goods and services produced in one country for goods and services produced in another country. In most cases, countries do not trade the actual goods and services. Rather, they use the income or money from the sale of their products to buy the products of another country. Trade among countries allows people in each country to use their energies in doing what they do best. That is, it lets them specialize. Trade and specialization go hand in hand and enable each of us to have more products to use and more different kinds of products at the lowest possible cost. Nations trade for many reasons. First, they trade because there are differences in natural resources in different parts of the world. The plants that can be grown are different. The mineral resources are also different. For example, Canada has nickel mines, but is too cold to grow oranges. The United States has only a few small nickel mines, but produces large crops of oranges. So, the United States buys nickel from Canada, and Canada buys oranges from the United States. We say that the United States exports oranges and imports nickel. Canada exports nickel and imports oranges. The second reason nations trade with one another is that it pays to specialize. Specialization makes the best use of a country's productive resources, its natural resources, the skill of its workers, and its factories. When a country specializes, it can make some goods that are of better quality than goods made elsewhere. Carpets woven in Iran and wine produced in France are examples of these special goods. Specialization also enables one country to produce some goods more cheaply than another country. For example, the United States has factories, machines, and tools for manufacturing jet planes. Belgium has artisans who are skilled at making lace. So, the United States sells jet planes to Belgium. Belgium sells lace to the United States. If the Belgians built factories and trained engineers for the few jets they need, those jets would be very expensive. If the United States began to train people to make lace, that, too, would be expensive. By trading, both countries get a good product from abroad for less than it would cost if made at home. It pays a country to specialize, even if it can produce everything cheaply. Within each country, there are some things that are produced more efficiently than other things. This is called comparative advantage. Suppose there is a person in town who is an excellent teacher and who also is a skilled carpenter. Suppose, too, that there is another person in town who is a skilled carpenter and who is a below-average teacher. If the second person could devote full attention to carpentry, and the first person full attention to teaching, then the town would be making the best use of the skills and talents it possesses. If, instead, both persons taught for half the week and did carpentry the other half, the town might not suffer from the quality of the carpentry, but the town would lose some of the benefits of better education, because the carpenter is a person of lesser teaching skills. In teaching, the carpenter does not have an advantage compared to the teacher. Towns, countries, and people are better off when they specialize in producing those things in which they have a comparative advantage. Many countries get a large part of their income from selling one or two primary products. Primary products are the raw materials from which manufactured goods are made. They may be farm products, such as wool, cotton, beef, or wheat. They may come from beneath the surface of the earth, as do copper, iron, coal, and crude oil. Or they may come from forests, as do wood and natural rubber. For example, the majority of Colombia's trade comes from selling coffee. Ghana depends heavily on cocoa exports. Malaysia depends on tin and rubber. These countries have all their eggs in one basket. If anything happens to the sales of their primary products, they are in trouble. Such countries will not be able to count on stable economies until they have more products to trade. Text B. Stocks and shares. In order to start a business, a man must have money to buy or rent a factory or shop, to buy machinery and goods, and to pay his workpeople. A man may sometimes be able himself to supply all the money he needs for this, but often he cannot do so, and then he may ask others to help him by making contributions. Money supplied in this way is called capital, and the people who supply it to him become members of this company. Of course, they hope, when they lend their money in this way, that the man's business will make a profit. And when the company does begin to make a profit, they all share in its profits. And the share each one gets is in proportion to the amount of capital he has supplied. Thus, if Smith has supplied £1,000 and Jones £2,000, Jones' share of the profits will be twice as big as Smith's share. Another way of saying that Smith and Jones supplied money to found the company is to say that they bought so many shares in its profits. Shares are usually divided into units of 25 pence, 50 pence, and 1 pound. Let us suppose that in this company they are in units of 1 pound. As the company was just being founded, it probably happened that with £1,000, Smith was able to buy 1,000 shares. However, when a company has grown and prospered, and people start to sell their shares to others who want to buy them, a 1 pound share often costs more than 1 pound. This is because people have great faith in the company, and they think that because the profits of the company are likely to increase, it will be worthwhile to pay more than 1 pound for a 1 pound share. On the other hand, if a company is not doing very well, its shares may sell for their stated value, or very near it, and if it is doing badly, its shares will sell for less than the stated value. It is obvious that people supply money to a company because they think it will make profits. These are paid out to shareholders at least once a year and are called dividends. If the company is doing well, it may pay a dividend of, say, 10 pence for every 1 pound share. This is often expressed not in pence per pound, but as a percentage. In this case, it would be 10%. The government, which also wants to borrow money from the public, almost always does so. Government stocks are called gilt-edged, originally because the certificate on which the loan was recorded had a gold edge like those found on the pages of old books. Later, the term gilt-edged came to have a wider meaning, standing for safety and security, the government being the one institution that would never fail to pay its debts. Normally, the government promises to repay the money borrowed within or at a certain specified time. This often applies to other kinds of stock, but hardly ever to shares.